So we will begin the regular meeting of the East Bay Charter Township Board meeting for June 10th, 2019. If we'll call the meeting to order, and if you all will join me, we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you everybody for being here, and we'll start, Ann, with roll call attendance.
Walters.
Present.
Lyle.
Here.
Henschel.
Here.
Bartlett.
Here.
Morrow.
Here.
Corte.
Here.
Friend.
Here. Thank you. The agenda presented in front of you, consent calendar, and the business before the Board of Trustees, the 2018 financial audit results, the an amendment to the Grand Traverse Metro Articles of Incorporation, East Bay Ambulance, we have four different items, mutual aid agreement, advanced life support assistance agreement, disposal of equipment, and full-time staffing request. We also have three ordinances in different stages in front of us. We have the Brown Bridge Quiet Park Ordinance, Area Park Ordinance, and the fireworks ordinance, which is an update from the previous fireworks ordinance based on statute. And then we also, those have already been introduced, and then we also have potential introduction of the short-term rental ordinance. All three of those ordinances will have public comment on them during the agenda item. And then last on our list is the election commission equipment request. Is there anybody from the board who would like to, has any issues with anything on the agenda, would like to add or remove anything?
I'd like to add, or to ask, can we get an update on the Grace McDonald Park?
No. Oh, sure, absolutely. Well, we'll put that at the end.
Sure.
You may have to remind me on there.
I'll write it down.
Okay. And seeing nothing else, we will move forward with that agenda. Is there any conflict of interest claimed by any member of the board with any items on the agenda? Okay, no conflicts are declared. This is the time for public comment. We are very happy that you have attended your the regular board meeting. This is an opportunity for public comment. You are welcome to come to the podium, introduce yourself with your name and address, and speak on an item. And I will ask that you do not speak on any items where there is public comment allowed during that agenda item. So this is the time for public comment on anything other than the Brown Bridge Quiet Area Park Ordinance, the fireworks ordinance, or the short-term rental ordinance. Is there anyone who would like to come forward and have public comment? And we do have a three-minute limitation, and as well, if there's any large groups, we can accommodate that. Go ahead, sir. Come on up to the podium. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
My name is Ron Boyle. I'm a resident here in East Bay Township over on South Airport Road. I have lived in northern Michigan most of my life, East Bay Township for most of my adult life. Just recently opened a small home business, and I've contacted the board of East Bay Township for the last couple of years in reference to a lawn ordinance. I would just like to make public mention of that and to see if there's anything we can do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your comment. This isn't the public comment isn't where we go back and forth, but we'll definitely take a look at that with respect to staff and then bring back some ideas to the township board. If you could as well leave your name and contact information with Ann at the end, our recording secretary, that would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other member of the public for public comment? Okay, seeing no further public comment, we will move on to correspondence. And in your packet, you will see that there is information on Garfield Township's notice of intent to amend their master plan, the Killingsworth plantings done by the Grand Traverse Conservation District. May meeting minutes for the Planning Commission, the Parks Commission, the April and May Treasurers Report, and as well on your desk, we have some communication from various members of the public. And I believe all of these are regarding short-term rentals. So that is our correspondence and report. Did any member of the board have any questions on any of those? Okay. We will move on then to the consent calendar. Anne, could you go over the consent calendar, please?
Sure. The purpose of the consent calendar is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one board motion without discussion. Any member of the board, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent calendar be removed from there and placed elsewhere on the agenda for full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. If any item is not removed from the consent calendar, the action noted in parentheses on the agenda is approved by a single board action adopting the consent calendar. This evening you have the May 13th, 2019 Board of Trustees regular meeting. In the general fund, check numbers 14572 through 14632 for $163,130.11. The emergency fund, check numbers 4055 through 4074, paid in the amount of $12,752.38. The receiving fund, checks numbered 2646 through 2649 in the amount of $70,621.80. Nothing written from the escrow fund. And the payroll fund. Payroll dated April 28th through May 11th, check number 6512 through 6521 for $40,721.25, which included $7,110.32 for payroll. And check number 6521 for $1,159.37 for State of Michigan withholdings. The payroll dated May 12th through May 25th, check numbers 4522 through 4532, totaled $39,998.89 and included $6,865.64 for payroll tax. And check number 6532 for $1,113.10 for State of Michigan withholdings. Total payroll, $80,720.14, and total amount paid, $327,224.43. And you have one proposed budget adjustment, BA 2019-10.
All right, very good. Thank you. Would any member of the board like something, anything removed from the consent calendar? Okay, if there's none, we'll ask any member of the public if they would like anything removed from the consent calendar. If there's none, we'll bring that back to the board. And is there a motion regarding the consent calendar?
I make a motion that we approve the consent calendar as presented.
Support.
Motion by Bartlett and support by Walters. Any further discussion? Okay, Anne, we'll do a roll call vote.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Lyle.
Yes.
Forte.
Yes.
Morrow.
Yes.
Inchel.
Yes.
Friend.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. We will move on to the business before the Board of Trustees. The first item on our agenda is our 2018 financial audit. Steve Peacock is here. Steve, if you come up. He is a principal and accountant from Raymond Robson, who's here to present the results to the Township Board.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for having me. As Mrs. Friend mentioned, my name is Steve Peacock. I'm an audit partner here at Raymond in Traverse City, here to present to you the results of the 2018 audit for East Bay Township. And I think in your packet you have two documents. You have a letter that looks like this, and then you have the bound financials. We're going to start with this letter if we could, please. This kind of gives a good summary of the audit and where we landed. That document is titled Independent Auditor's Communication with Those Charged with Governance, which is the board. Financial statements we were engaged to audit were the financial statements for East Bay Charter Township as of the year ended December 31st, 2018. The middle section of page one talks about the responsibility in relation to the financial statement audit. We issued an engagement letter on February the 1st, 2019, saying we were going to do certain procedures to get to an audit opinion. I'm here to tell you that those procedures have been completed, concluded on, and the financial statements have been issued. They've been filed with the State of Michigan, so they are already completed. Under plan, scope, and timing of the audit, we concluded internal planning matters on April the 8th, 2019, and those planning benchmarks that we laid out internally were followed without exception. On to page 2, compliance with all ethics requirements. Myself and all members of the engagement team complied with all the relevant ethical requirements regarding independence and other requirements in our profession. Under qualitative aspects of the township's significant accounting practices, those are delineated in footnote number 1 to the financial statement. There were no significant changes this year in your accounting policies used in years past, so there's no new accounting pronouncements adopted during the year. Under significant accounting estimates, you'll see the 3 bullet points there at the bottom of the page. Every financial statement has a certain level of estimates embedded in them, and these are the 3 most material ones. Management's estimated useful life of depreciable capital assets, that's an estimate. This may be on the books for 7 years, could last 15, could last 3 years. So those are estimates that are embedded in capital assets. Number 2, the estimates in the allowable for uncollectible receivables. Again, that's based on estimates and past collection experience. And then the 3rd one is various investment instruments which are exposed to a variety of risks that yield some form of estimation. If you look at the bottom paragraph, we've evaluated the key factors and assumptions used to develop these estimates and determine that they are reasonable in relation to the financial statements taken as a whole in relation to all opinion units. Top of page 3, there were no difficulties encountered during the audit. Corrected or uncorrected misstatements, that talks about material audit adjustments, which there were none. Disagreements with management, there were none. The last 4 or 5 pages of this document are a representation letter, which is signed by management of the township, that basically tells the audit firm that what we've requested and what you've given us is accurate and honest to the best of your knowledge. Under management's consultation with other accountants, to our knowledge, there have been no other consultations other than in your normal course of business with your hired accountant that comes in periodically. To our knowledge, there have been no other type controversial issues where another audit firm was involved. And other significant matters, findings, or issues, there are none. Page 4, other information and documents containing audited financial statements. There are documents in the bound report that has things other than financial statements, such as the management's discussion and analysis. We do not audit those. We do not audit the MD&A, but we read it to make sure it's consistent with the financial statements that follow. And then for anybody in the room that's having problems sleeping, that next paragraph talks about upcoming changes in accounting standards. So these are riveting and gripping pieces of information on attachment A, which is the next page, A1 and A2. These are brief synopses of upcoming Governmental Accounting Standard Board pronouncements. None of these are going to have a material impact on the township's operations. If, in fact, we do have to get into implementation for any of these, we will work with management to make sure they are complied with to help them get in compliance with GAAP. So, and then the last page, last 4 or 5 pages, is the management rep letter, which we talked about. So, any questions on this document? Hearing none, I'll go through the financial statements here briefly. So on the bound copy, direct your attention to page 1. It's the first page with our letterhead on it. That is the opinion of the financial statements. Looks very similar to the letter we just talked about. On the report of financial statements, it talks about the financial statements engaged to audit. Again, December 31 financials. The financial statements that follow the audit opinion do not belong to Raymond. They belong to management of the Township of East Bay. That's what that paragraph tells you. Under independent auditor's responsibility, that is a 3-paragraph discussion, top of page 2. We believe that the audit evidence we have obtained is sufficient and appropriate to provide a basis for our audit opinions. So we've got the evidence we need to verify balances and transactions, so we are comfortable there. The next paragraph is the opinion, and that is an unmodified or clean opinion. So that's the highest level of assurance that audit firms can place on financial statements. So that's the gold standard. Okay. Under required supplementary information, this talks about the management's discussion and analysis. Again, we talked about that earlier. That is not a document that is audited, but it is read to make sure it's consistent with the financial statements that follow. The last paragraph, other information, this talks about the combining financial statements that appear after the footnotes. Those numbers are audited by the audit, or covered by the audit opinion, and those are fairly stated as well. So, you guys get a gold star for having a good, clean audit opinion. Let's move over now to page 13. Under current governmental accounting standards, governments are required to present two balance sheets and two income statements with a reconciliation between both of them. So on page 13 is your statement of net position. That's balance sheet number one. Governmental activities are on the first column, business type activities, primarily water and sewer, and then the total. So I'll speak from the total column. Total assets of the township are $37.3 million. You have long-term liabilities of $6.5 million, due in more than 1 year, about $714 due. In the coming up year, total liabilities, $7,568. You collected some taxes that were due for a subsequent period, so that's some deferred revenue at $2.3 million. Overall net position of the township at $27.5 million is a very healthy net position for a township of your size. So, good news there. That's balance sheet number one. Income statement number one appears on page 14 and 15. Doesn't look like a normal income statement if you're from the for-profit world. Starts off with expenses by the different governmental activities, and then you'll see the business type activities such as water and sewer appear towards the bottom. Expenses come first, charges for services, operating grants, and contributions. The takeaway from here is the far right-hand column, bottom number, $1,492,318, is the net expense before applying property taxes, which appears on page 15. These numbers carry over to the top of page 15. You apply property taxes, grants and contributions, other unrestricted revenue, or investment earnings, and then a joint venture gain. So total general revenues of $3.5 million. When you subtract out the net expense, you get to an overall change in net position of $1,991,000. So that would be akin to, say, net income. So the township did better this year with $1,991,000 in overall revenue in excess of expenditures. All right. Moving along here, page 16. This is balance sheet number two. This is probably what you're most used to seeing is on a fund-by-fund basis. Your general fund, your emergency services, municipal streets, and then your non-major funds are all categorized in that second column from the right. Those can be a number of different small funds that all aggregate up. So I'll talk from the general fund, $3,772,000 of total assets, primarily comprised of cash and cash equivalents and receivables, some sundry accounts payable at $72,000, overall total liabilities of $86,000. Taxes levied that were collected prior to year-end for a subsequent period, $417,000. And then the fund balance of $3,269,771. And that is a very strong fund balance in the unassigned portion of $2,343,000. So that, again, another very healthy balance sheet. So balance sheet number two looks good. Page 17 is the reconciliation between the two balance sheets. And that is going to primarily disclose items such as fixed assets, long-term debt, and some other items that are not recorded on the fund statements. So on page 18 begins your second income statement. This again is for the general emergency services, municipal streets, and non-major. Total revenues in the general fund of $1,694,000, total expenditures of $1,455,000. And then you had some other financing sources, issuance of long-term debt, and then you transferred $133,000 out. Overall net change in fund balance, third line from the bottom, $147,581. Again, another nice increase in your fund balance. So that would also be akin to a net income. So all the barometers are heading in the right direction here for that for the 2018 fiscal year. On page 19 is the reconciliation between the two income statements. Again, those are going to be primarily items such as fixed assets and bonded debt and so forth. All right. Any questions so far? Okay. On pages 20 through 23 are the budgetary comparisons, your original budget, final budget, the actual performance of the different fund, and then anything over or under your final budget. And we'll talk about the budgeting, the couple of things we found in the budgeting process when we get going here. On page 24 are your proprietary funds, and these are the water and sewer funds. Proprietary funds are funds that look, act, and smell like a regular business. So you'll see the assets. I'll speak from the total columns on this one. Total assets of the water and sewer fund, $25.4 million. You've got current liabilities of $1,407,000, bonds payable of just about $5.7 million. Total liabilities of $7,096,000, leaving a net position of $18,357,000. Broken out between capital assets of $10,337,000 and unrestricted of $8,020,000. Page 25 is the income statement for water and sewer. Total revenue is $2,589,000. Expenses of $1,811,000. Operating income is $777,000. You had some non-operating revenues of $141,000. Total change in net position or net income in the proprietary funds of $919,000. So water and sewer performed pretty well for you in 2018 as well. And then just to confuse matters, pages 26 and 27, those are the cash flow statements. Proprietary funds are the only funds that are required to have cash flow statements. That's why you don't find them in the general fund or any of the non-governmental or the governmental funds do not have cash flow statements. So this document on 26-27 reconciles opening cash to ending cash between the beginning of the year and the end of the year through subtotals such as operating activities. So you see in the total column, far right-hand side, third line down, water and sewer generated cash of $1,318,000. The next subtotal is $891,000 of cash spent on capital and related financing activities. You receive $313,000 of interest. And so your net change in cash for the year was $739,419 when added to your opening cash. You get to $7,444,624. Page 28 is your agency fund. This is going to be cash that is held on behalf of somebody else. So you'll see that you've got $1,009,000 in cash, $1,840,000 is due to other governments. And then $84,275 would be due to non-governmental type entities. Any questions on the financial statements? Just sort of a brief discussion on the footnotes here. We'll continue. Page 30 is the footnotes. Starts the footnotes, and those roll through to page 30. They're lengthy, but you're not in MERS, so it's not 11 pages longer than it could be. So it goes from 30 to page 48. Again, the township did not adopt any new accounting standards this year, so the accounting standards you've had in years past are the same year over year. So there's not a lot of changes in the footnotes. So we'll just talk at high 30,000-foot level. Footnote number one, beginning on 30, talks about your summary of significant accounting policies. And those roll through all the way through to page 30, top middle of page 32. Certain accounting policies as they relate to deposits and investments are in 32. Page 33, receivables and payables, prepaid items, capital assets, long-term obligations, round out page 33. Again, these are accounting policies. You don't see a lot of numbers in here. These are just policies, and we'll get into the meat of the footnotes here shortly. Deferred inflows of resources, fund equity, use of estimates, round out page 34 in the accounting policies. At the top of page 35, we start a discussion on budgetary information. And you will see in footnote number 3, there were three line items that had expenses in excess of what was approved by the budget, street lighting, Planning Commission, Board of Appeals, and then Public Works. State government requires us to report these to the state. That's why they appear in your footnotes. With only three of them, I would not expect a lot of correspondence from the state. We've had clients who have had several pages of these, so you're in good shape for only having three of those. As you continue through the document, the more detailed explanation of cash and cash equivalents, on page four, footnote number four, page 35. That carries over to page 38. Where there is a brief discussion in footnote number five about your receivables, what the composition of those are, accounts payable are footnote number six, and what those are related to, interfund receivables and payables on 39. Page 40 are your capital assets. This is a roll forward from the beginning of the period showing any additions, any disposals, or any transfers. So that'll be the capital asset activity. The bottom half of that table is the depreciation that was recorded during the year. Those are for the government funds on page 40. 41 begins the fixed assets as it relates to water and sewer. So you'll see the additions, disposals, and transfers as it relates to water sewer there. And then at the middle to the bottom part of page 41 shows the distribution of the depreciation expense. Similar footnote format on pages 42 and 43 as it relates to your long-term debt. You'll see the beginning balance there. All you had at the beginning of the year was a capital lease. You issued some bonds during the year, and there was, you see the addition column there, deletions, ending balance, and then the amount that's due within 1 year. Under business type activities, this would relate to water and sewer. You'll see the opening balances there, similar format. Any additions to that debt or deductions rolling out to the ending balance. Over to page 43. These are your totals for water and sewer, as well as the government funds. And then you see in that table in the middle, this is your debt service for the next 5 years individually, and then collectively grouped in 5 years, 2024 to 28, 29 to 33, 34 to 35. So that's your debt, the cash that's going to be required to pay these obligations off in both principal and interest. Page 44, brief discussion on capital leases. Footnote number 10 talks about your master sewer agreement. The Metro Services Emergency Authority is discussed at the bottom of that. Rolling over to 45, risk management has a brief discussion on there. Nothing came to our attention that required any substantial or material adjustments as far as risk management goes. Property tax policies and accounting, round out footnote number 12. Top of page 46, this is your deferred compensation discussion, your pension plan, and your state construction code act compliance requirements. Round out page 46. 47, this is the disclosure of your fund balance as it relates to GASB 54. Shows where your non-spendable, your restricted, and your capital amounts are restricted and what they're for. So it's just a little deeper dive into the fund balance totals. Top of page 48, this is the reconciliation of net investment and capital assets from the balance sheet. Essentially what this is all your capital assets are at the top. Any outstanding bonded debt you have there that's offset against those assets, you take that against the total capitalized asset cost and you get down to a net investment in capital assets. And finally, the last footnote, footnote number 18, talks about subsequent event for the sewer rehabilitation project. We deem that to be material enough to at least mention in the footnotes. It wasn't accounted for in 18, but it's just mentioned in the subsequent event footnote. Any questions on the footnotes? Okay. The last part of the document consists of all of the smaller funds that roll up to the facing financial statements, so I do not generally comment on the combining funds, and but if there's any specific questions, I'm happy to entertain those at this point.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Steve?
Well, I'm good.
We appreciate
it. Thank you, and Tracy and Sue and everybody on board here for helping us out get through all this. There's a fair amount of blood, sweat, and tears that go into these documents. So.
Well, we really appreciate it. As the board knows, we changed accounting firms or auditing firms this year, and we feel that Raymond did a really thorough job with the audit. I want to, Pat Clifford here?
Yeah, he's right behind here.
I want to thank Pat. He's with Manor. So let's say the second word, Manor Coasters? Kasterison. And, of course, that's the accounting help that we have on a monthly basis. And he and Steve Kernovic have been extremely helpful in preparing for the audit and, I think, making it go smoothly. So we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Terrific.
Have the rest
Thank
of your
you,
board meeting
evening. Thank we'll you. See you next year, Steve.
You will, for right. sure. Right. Thank you.
Take
Thanks.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Pat, thank you very much. Okay. All right, we will move on to the next agenda item, which is the amendment to the Grand Traverse Metro Articles of Incorporation. Pat Hunter is here. Pat, you're welcome to come up to the podium. I think that our board is pretty well versed in where we're at with respect to this. What you have in front of us is the Articles of Incorporation with amendments shown in the track changes, and then the final copy for the board. This is all based on, and you'll excuse me, I forget the date that we had the meeting where we agreed upon what we were moving for, the intent yeah. of what we were moving forward.
April 16th, something
like that. Yeah, yeah, somewhere around there. does anybody have any questions specifically? Again, or Pat, I'll say, would you like to add anything else?
Well, just I'm glad it's close to being over. No, I think the changes are definitely something that the department can live with, and in our opinion, they make some sense and are not a burden in us running the department.
Okay, and I think the board is aware. I'm trying to remember if at that special meeting when we decided upon this, if that was part of the discussion. But I know it is in here, and there was no issue with it at the Metro Board, but also changing some verbiage that we needed to with respect to the parties that we can contract with and do business with as partners, and that included, did we specifically, I'm trying to find it here.
I don't think it was specifically named.
Okay. Alrighty. Just the verbiage was changed to allow for that. Okay, are there any questions for Pat or for myself or Glenn or Ryan or Sue? Or is there a motion that the board someone would like to put forth?
I would make a motion to adopt changes to the Articles of Incorporation.
Support.
Michael.
Support.
I think I Andrea already did.
Oh, okay. So there's been a motion twice. By Lyle and support by Henschel. Any further discussion? Okay, Ann, we'll do a roll call vote.
Lyle?
Yes.
Henschel?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Mauro?
Yes.
Forte?
Yes.
Friend?
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Pat, very much.
Thank you to all of you guys that worked on that. It was a long process.
Okay, next on our agenda where my screen went blank. Okay, we'll move to the paper copy. the East Bay Ambulance. Our director, Nick Lemkul, is here. Nick, if you'd come up and visit with the board. The first items we have on there are the mutual aid agreement and then the agreement for advanced life support. Would you like to go through those?
Yeah, what we're asking for is approval of the model stuff that we can go out and sign with other agencies. We've done it with Norflight, but we have a lot that need to be renewed since our ALS stuff. And versus bringing all of them back here, we're just asking for approval of the agreements for the mutual aid that we can go out and sign with them. And then what we're asking for with our ALS stuff is because we're now ALS as of April of last month, or April 26th, we have the opportunity to provide intercepts with area agencies. We're not looking to do this on a consistent manner, but as a backup. So Norflight, for example, intercepts with Kingsley. If they're tied up, we have the ability that we can intercept with them to provide a quicker service at times. So that's there as well. In there, there's also the ALS intercept fees, which we've never established that. And that's $350, which is comparable. City Fires is $450. Norflight's is $250 currently, and Blair's is actually $350. We kind of copied theirs and borrowed it from them. With that, it's got a 5% discount if they pay within the first invoice, and then beyond that it goes back up to the $350, and then if it's beyond 90 days it goes up 5% from there. So we would sign that with, for example, like Fife Lake, and Kingsley Paradise.
Okay, and then did you have, we're working with Richard Wilson?
He did not give me the contract back yet.
Okay.
He's still working on that.
Okay. All right, and that was just legal counsel that was taking a look over this?
He said it looked mostly good, but he just wanted to double check a couple things with that.
Okay, all right. So, Nick, are we are looking for a motion to...
I think we had it in there.
I don't think we do have it specifically in here, do we?
I'll make a stab at it. I make a motion to accept the mutual aid agreement language on the condition that the attorney that is looking at it signs off.
Right, and I would say motion to accept the mutual aid reciprocal aid agreement and authorization for staff to enter into this agreement with jurisdictions.
You know, you read my mind.
I'll support that.
The only time.
What this allows us to do is the document that Nick has looked at and brought forth and is going over with counsel, it allows him to adjust those as needed. And anything that changes, rates, fees, those things come back to the board, but would allow us to enter into those agreements.
Have that.
No.
It should be mutual aid and ALS intercept billing agreement.
So if you want to get that language so that Ann can put it in the minutes, yes. That would be helpful.
Do you have that, Ann?
No, I was stuck with stipulation at legal books.
So what we would be looking for the board is approval of the mutual reciprocal aid agreement and ALS intercept agreement. Authorization for the director to enter in those agreement with neighboring jurisdictions. Conditional of approval, or the blessing
approval
of township legal counsel.
So, do you want that to be your motion, since you remember it?
You're welcome. Doesn't sound
like me.
You're welcome to it. You're welcome to it. Is there support for that motion?
Mindy supported it.
Okay.
Well,
great.
Before you changed.
Do you still support that motion?
I supported it after you changed it, so I'm good. Okay.
Are we all okay with Cortade? Has made the motion and is supported by Walters? We walked through that one quite gracefully, didn't we?
Sure.
Any further discussion?
I just have, there's one place where you left Blair in there. So it's on page 6.
Okay.
It's just a typo thing. But
okay.
I just didn't want you to go and enter into those agreements.
Sounds good. Did you have something else?
I got a question.
Sure.
Or a concern, I guess.
Sure.
If you're running Intercept for Northlight or whoever, let's say it's Northlight, for ALS, who's going to be taking care of East Bay?
We have people that live in our township still that are paramedics and that are available most of the time. For example, me. Chief lives in the township for a backup truck. Rick lives close. And like I said, it's not going to be a consistent basis. It's almost like our mutual aid agreements. We're not going to do it every day. We're not out soliciting to do this. It's just as a backup.
So this goes hand in hand with the mutual aid agreement, really, and allows us to bill for that mutual aid when it's ALS, correct?
Yep. It's not changing our practice. It's just broadening our mutual aid.
Well, I think I understand that, but we've opened up where now we're going the whole strip and all the way up through Holiday Hills, and then now we're asking to go out from intercepts.
Correct.
And we only got one car running, right?
Right, currently. And that's...
Are we looking at expanding that?
Not right now. We're going to evaluate where it goes, and then we'll go from there. Most days, I'm at the station. If I'm not working a shift, I'm doing administrative stuff, so that would make me available for that type of stuff as well. We just have to evaluate and see where it goes.
The way I understand it, Glenn, is, if when we do mutual aid... we're there as other agencies need us, and whatever the call is. And as you know, they've gone to Pat. What's the type of dispatch?
Proximity dispatch.
So it's really who's in the area and who has the skill set and who can reach that emergency the quickest. This particularly this ALS allows us to bill for that. In addition to it being mutual aid. Any other questions? Okay. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed by no? Okay. What else? Let's see. We have on the agenda here is the full-time staff.
Do you have your disposal?
Oh, sorry. Disposal equipment. Yep. Go ahead. So go ahead, Nick, if you want to go over that.
We've been kind of doing spring cleaning at the station, and we found boxes of old radio equipment. A couple years ago, the county went from the VHF system to the 800 megahertz system, and all the VHF stuff we're just asking to get rid of. And then the CPOs have their radar trailer that they haven't used in a couple years, I think, Matt, right? That we're also asking to put that on surplus as well. You guys should have the lists.
Okay.
Question.
Yep.
On the radios, these are no good for anything. We're not carrying two different radios. We're not needing them.
Nope.
Okay.
As far as I know, the radio. One for each truck, but they're already in there. And the radio system that I know of isn't even up and operational anymore.
Okay. The other thing is the radar trailer. Can anybody check and see if we can even sell it?
So
that was got with a grant.
Yeah, actually, Brian let the township know about that because he wrote the grant that it was received, 10 or 15 years ago, that time frame, and mentioned the funding source and what you had to do for disposal. We are researching some of that for some final details, but what it seems to show, the current grant funding agency that still does Office of Highway...
Highway Safety Planning.
Highway
OHSP.
Safety Planning. Okay. Their current contract language for the grant is that if any equipment is valued currently at less than $5,000, then that can be disposed of and there's no ties with the grant. We have looked at these trailers on publicsurplus.com and so forth, and this would be valued at less than $5,000. I think you concurred with the thought on that likely it would be less than
$5,000. I don't think so.
So I have a call into the undersheriff and also the captain for the CPOs just to validate that. They weren't sure on that, but we're going to check on that. So I guess I would ask that this be put on the disposal equipment contingent upon that we don't find anything to the...
Everybody's signing.
Exactly. To the, thank you, to the contrary. What we would be looking for is the grant that it was obviously awarded with has some ties to it that doesn't allow us to dispose of it. So, other questions or a motion to approve the... or declare the items listed and presented as ready for disposal of excess equipment?
I would make that motion. And I just wanted to say, Deb and I went over and Oz gave us a little tour of the station, and they have done a great job of cleaning up, and it looks, I hadn't really paid attention when I've been there for pancake breakfast, but it's improved vastly over the years. I guess I just missed it when I'm serving pancakes.
I think they've been doing a lot of painting and cleaning and organizing and finding things like this equipment that's, kind of been tucked away and seeing.
They brought us big, huge map books the one day. So.
Terrific. Was there a motion?
I made the motion.
Made by Bartlett. Is there support for that motion?
Support it.
Okay, and support by Morrow. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor with the list of disposable equipment, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed by no? All right. Thank you very much. We'll move on to the fifth FTE request. Nick, do you want to take this one on? Explain kind of the approach that we were looking at this.
Sure. One thing, since we've gone ALS and we've kind of transitioned to the 24-hour coverage with both people and some different changes, the schedule's filled, but we're running into some issues sometimes where we're either paying overtime, excessive overtime, or I'm coming in extra time to do it. And we're fighting with all these area agencies for staff. You know, Chief will say the same thing. We're fighting each other for staff. Most of our staff works for him, and vice versa, and also works for other ambulance agencies. So what we're trying to do is to lessen the overtime, lessen the potential burnout, is to staff another FTE. It's not to add on a truck, but it's to replace either part-time hours or overtime hours, so it would fill into an open spot already. Typically, we have anywhere between 36 and 48 hours open anyway, with the part relying on the part-time staff. But this would make it easier for scheduling, and like I said, cut down the potential overtime and then cut down potential burnout with that. What I'd like to do is either offer it to another paramedic or somebody that's currently in paramedic class that we could potentially take a risk for them passing and making them a paramedic when they get done with school. The way we want to pay for it is we're, like Glenn said, we're taking over the rest of the township. That's going to give us about $26,000 in revenue in addition to what our normal was, and that should cover the benefits, and then the wages will come from the current part-time hours or overtime hours.
And I would note that $17.50 an hour is a generalization,
yeah,
based on, since we obviously don't know who will apply and who would be recommended to the township board, we kind of generalized where we thought that wage would be. Again, just for clarification and just kind of driving that home, the cost, you have the cost here for remaining 2019 and looking into 2020. Obviously, we haven't done the 2020 budget yet, but wanted to kind of throw that in there for information on an annual basis. Again, it's two different things. What would come back to the board is also the budget amendments to accomplish this, and we would do that more when we when we're looking at that specific recommendation. Again, it'll be that budget amendment will be the shifting from our current wages of overtime and part-time to our regular part-time, and then into some of those benefit line items as well. So, questions from the board?
I guess I was under the impression that we had enough full-time help to cover 24/7 when we went ALS. We don't.
We have a paramedic. So we have, the way it's set up now is we have a full-time member on every day, and then that second person is supplemented by part-time.
Oh, so we don't have the two people. All we got is just one.
Yes, we have one paramedic on every day with the way our staffing schedule.
And everybody else is a part-time.
Correct.
And, of course, as you know, being on Metro's board, how difficult it is in filling some of those shifts. Now, we do have, and we have added to our part-time roster, and taking a look at the people who either have moved on and really truly aren't pulling shifts, and as well added to it with, I think three have been added, haven't they, in part-time? Two.
There was still one
Jaina
left.
Austin, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking there was a third, too. But
I think you asked for a third, but it wasn't filled yet.
Two.
Was it two?
So, but the point is, you know, we've added to that part-time roster, so it just becomes we're competing, like Nick has mentioned, with all of the other agencies that are out there. So, the other option is, you know, we talked about this, Nick and I. What do you throw more money at the part-time and bring those wages up? But we've looked through and adjusted wages and made them competitive mm-hmm. there. So we feel like if we're able to do the full-time, then we know that we have that commitment of those hours for that coverage.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
This is based on hourly, not a salary.
Correct. Correct.
No. I guess my question is, one sufficient, or do we need to be actively seeking more than one? I guess my question to you.
I think one for now is sufficient, because it'll help that between our part-time staff and our full-time staff. And we want to keep some of our part-time staff for when people take vacations. But I also think with, like what Glenn said, with us taking the rest of the township, we may need to look into the future as to, do we need to add more trucks during the daytime or another truck during the daytime to cover the calls? But I just don't have that answer for that right now.
But we'll do that based on the data that we're.
So well, do we want to be able to allow that to happen without coming back to the board? We want to say as needed?
Oh, I would think that the board would, my preference as one of seven would be that we would do this with one FTE, and if there was another need, we would come back to the board. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't just want to have a...
I wouldn't want a revolving door, but blanket. I also want, if you have two wonderful candidates, I don't want one to be maybe delayed and end up in another facility because they are going to be a hot commodity.
I think we want to make sure that the shifts are filled, and we are filling those shifts. They're not going unfilled. Right. But what happens is you're either the current part-timers who are consistently pulling shifts are either having so many hours that they are looking like not part-time anymore, mm-hmm. and then you get into over, 36 hours a week and so forth. We want to stay away from that, so we want to keep them truly part-time. Or the other thing that happens is then you're putting those hours on your full-time already, and then you're paying considerable overtime, as well as you don't want to do that extensively because then you look at employee burnout and those types of things. So we're trying to mitigate mm-hmm. both of those with the one FTE mm-hmm. added. And we will, as of this morning, answering the calls. Mm-hmm. Throughout the jurisdiction, and as we add that employee, and we'll do so expeditiously, I'm pretty sure you'll be ready to put that posting out there quickly and get that back to the board.
Well, and I think the summer's activity down on the strip answering those calls will give you a pretty good idea of where you need to be for sure next year. So,
other questions from the board or thoughts? Okay, any motions?
I would make a motion to approve the posting of a full-time paramedic or EMT.
So I put or EMT on that because of the discussion we had the other day. I wanted to leave you the flexibility. Do we just want to leave that as paramedic or?
Well, I think paramedic or EMT.
Okay.
Experienced
like I said,
EMT.
I would be looking for somebody that's either already currently a paramedic or somebody that's enrolled in a paramedic class. That will be done soon.
Because it wouldn't do you any good just to have an EMT, correct? I mean, not just
There's places in our system for EMTs, but right. being an ALS agency.
You need the paramedic.
It provides more flexibility than mm-hmm.
And I didn't mean to say just EMT.
No, we understand.
Please.
Well, it's because you have to have one paramedic
right.
on all the time,
right.
so it makes a lot of sense for our full-time to be paramedics. Okay, so there's a motion put forth by Bartlett to approve the posting of a full-time paramedic or EMT. Is there support for that motion?
Support
by Walters. Motion by Bartlett, support by Walters. Any further discussion by the board? Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed by no? All right, thank you very much, and we'll keep you updated, and obviously you'll be receiving a recommendation. And exactly, next month in July, and obviously Nick will let us know if we need to do anything quicker than that even. Sure. Nick, did you want to go over anything? I didn't mean to gloss over the reporter information that you had in the board packet as well.
No, that's just general what we've been doing. Like I said in the ambulance monthly report, April 25th was our agency inspection for ALS. I'm sorry I missed our last meeting, but that was our inspection. Everything went well there. Like I said, effective today, about noon, we expanded our coverage area to the remaining parts of East Bay Township. April, we had 36 calls for service, and 26 of those were transports. Two of those calls were outside of East Bay Township into mutual aid. May, we had 44 calls, 29 transports. 25 of those 29 were ALS, and then 15 non-transport or fire standbys. We did have two patients outside of East Bay Township, and then just random things that we've done. We've helped TCAPS with lockdown drills. We assisted Metro Fire on a couple POVEDs, one at Station 1, and then Timber Ridge. And then I've just been talking with area agencies on our mutual aid stuff.
Okay.
So on the, I'm sorry, can
no,
I ask
go right
a
ahead,
question?
Of course.
On those, I don't have the report. The ALS runs in May, you said 25 or something.
Yep.
25 or 29.
So those are ones that we would have been using Northflight for.
Yep.
So we no longer have that cost going out or that expense going out.
Correct.
So that's huge. That's huge.
Yes.
All right. Now, Nick doesn't know I'm going to mention this, so I'll just spring this on him. But if any board members, as Tracy got a chance to visit over at Station 9 and the ambulance, and as well as Pat's here, so I'll spring this on him too, please feel free to contact them and take a visit over. They would love to show you some of the things that they've been accomplishing over there.
Definitely step on by.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you
as well, Pat. Have a good evening. Although you are welcome to stay around for the rest of our agenda if you care to. Okay. I understand. Okay, we will move on to the ordinances that are before us. The first one is consideration of the previously introduced Brown Bridge Quiet Area Park Ordinance. This was introduced last month. We will have public comment on this. If there's anybody who would like to address the board regarding this introduced ordinance, please feel free to come to the podium, introduce yourself. There's a roughly three-minute limitation. We promise not to pull you out with a coat hook, but as well, if we have a lot of people, we'll have to limit that to 3 minutes for public comment. Anybody on the Brown Bridge Quiet Area Park Ordinance? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring that back to the board. Is there any questions for, and Brian Graham is here as a resource for us on these ordinances. Is there any questions from the board for Brian on this? The proposed or introduced ordinance is in your packet. Is there any action proposed by a board member?
I would make a motion to approve the Brown Bridge Quiet Area Ordinance, which is Ordinance 3 of 2019.
I will support that.
Okay. Motion has been made by Bartlett and supported by Walters for the Brown Bridge Quiet Area Park Ordinance. Do I need anything else in that motion? All right. Very good. Yep. Any further discussion? Go ahead.
There's some formatting issues going on here.
Okay.
We can correct those, right?
If there are typos, we can absolutely do that, right?
They're not typos. They're just formatting. Yeah.
As well today too. So yes, we can take care of those. Trying to see where some of them. Where
is section 4A1?
Yeah. Yep.
And 2.
We can take care of those. But they don't change the content of the ordinance. Okay, so there's been a motion made and supported, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Lyle.
Yes.
Forte.
No.
Merrill.
Yes.
Henschel.
No.
Friend.
Yes. Okay, very good. We will move on to the consideration of the previously introduced fireworks ordinance. This is ordinance number 4, potentially of 2019. Again, we will have public comment. If there's anybody who would like to address the board regarding this introduced fireworks ordinance, please feel free to come up to the podium and introduce yourself. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring this back to the board. Are there any questions for Brian Graham or for staff or regarding the proposed fireworks ordinance? Or is there an action?
This is in support of what our state passed so we're compliant with the state fireworks.
So it's a little bit, I'll let Brian answer that, but I mean, we wouldn't have to pass this. It gives us the ability.
What happened is in the past, there was a state statute that limited the times where a municipality could restrict the use of consumer fireworks. And so there was a recent amendment that more closely limited, there were fewer days that you could then have no restrictions. So this proposed amendment is consistent with that amended state statute.
Okay. Thank you.
It's maximizing to the greatest extent possible the limitations on the use of consumer fireworks in the township, is the way it's basically said.
Thank you.
Okay. Glenn, did you have a question or comment?
No, I think he answered part of it. I became a little more clear.
It's more restrictive. More restrictive on the dates
than what we currently have.
And this is something we do. Glenn can probably attest to this. Leslie's here. Our CPO Matt is here. We do frequently have issues with fireworks, obviously. So that is something that we do have a healthy dose of complaints over. Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, we had them just the other day. Somebody shoot some big ones off. We sent some stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
The fire department gets called.
Okay. Any other questions or comments by the board or a proposed motion? Okay, I will move to approve ordinance number 4 of 2019, called the East Bay Charter Township Consumer Fireworks Ordinance. Is there support for that motion?
I'll support it.
Okay. Motion has been made and supported. Further discussion?
So there's not a way that, like, a business that's having a wedding can get a permit to shoot them off with this ordinance, correct?
No. Brian, do you want to address that?
No, not under this ordinance. This, again, state law allows you to restrict the use of consumer fireworks, but only to certain days you cannot restrict, and this is the maximum authorized by state law. You're not required to do it. You could always have a more lenient.
Right. I'm just saying if we have this passed, then, you know, there's a wedding going on the strip, and they want to shoot fireworks at the end. That's not permitted by this, and we can't permit it in any way, correct?
Not the way this is done. Correct.
Thank you.
And so, just to be clear, the dates are basically right around, they are New Year's Eve, Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day, which are your traditional fireworks type celebrations. Any further questions? Okay, there's been a motion by Friend and supported by Bartlett. Anne, we'll do a roll call vote.
Sure. Friend.
Yes.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Walters.
Yes.
Lyle.
Yes.
Enchel.
Yes.
Merrill.
Yes.
Forte.
Yes.
Okay, very good. We'll move forward to the introduction of the short-term rental ordinance. This has not been introduced. This is up for introduction. There is a memo in your board packet from Brian Graham. I will have him go over that, but first, as we did with the other two ordinances, I will open this up to public comment. If there's anybody who would like to make public comment to the board, please feel free to come up to the podium, introduce yourself with your name, address. And again, we'll limit that generally to 3 minutes. And you're welcome. Yep, come on right up.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good.
Good. For those who don't know me, my name is John Jury. I live at 1615 East of River Road. And I believe this is the fourth time addressing the board. Again, I want to say thank you to the board. Thank you for producing an avenue to allow short-term rentals. And it just seems like we're trying to work through some of the nuts and bolts. I do want to kind of pose a couple of questions this evening. Not looking for answers this evening, but just hopefully getting some answers in the future. One of my questions is there any empirical or statistical data that shows that a 7-day rule would cut down on noise ordinance violations? CPO here actually responded to that fireworks call at my request the other day. Happened to be a non-STR owner that was shooting off the fireworks for 3 days. My other question to the board would be, has there been any study to show empirically the loss of revenue that has potential by creating the 7-day rule? The reason I ask this is I've just run some rudimentary numbers with my cleaning lady. My cleaning lady's been working for me for 3 years, and she does an average gross of about $4,500 a year in cleaning. With the 7-day rule, that would cut it by almost 58%. So and she's local. She lives here in the township, and that's a pretty big hit for a local person. So I think the last time, couple of times that I've come up here has explained how the 7-day rule would impact me directly. Today I want to bring light to the board that it's going to impact others, residual workers, if you will, that that help me manage and maintain a really nice property. Again, thank you to the board. I'd really like you guys to really try and consider the reasoning behind the 7-day rule. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comment. Is there anyone else who would like to make public comment at this time? Hi, how are you?
Good evening. I'm Gail Miller, 774 Lake George Trail. Did everybody get a copy of this?
We do have a copy of that.
The East Bay hosts continue to oppose two main provisions of the ordinance, the booking restrictions and the septic permit requirement. It astounds me that you have over 100 hosts here, local citizens willing to work with you to meet your objectives, yet the board leadership has entirely ignored both our suggestions and our pleas for reason and rationality. The irony of the situation is that you're risking an expensive lawsuit that we don't want to enter into, and I'm sure that most of the taxpayers don't want the township to enter into, to provisions that I believe won't meet your goals. If you look at this document that I just handed out, this is my booking calendar that host compliance and the public can see. So you can't tell from this view what is what on that calendar. The gray sections are a mix of paid bookings of various lengths, family use, breaks between bookings that don't meet my minimum stay requirements, and other blocked dates. You can't tell which is which. Enforcement of the booking restriction, as you've identified it in both option one and option two, are going to be cumbersome and extremely difficult, if possible at all. Does it make sense to waste the township's tax dollars fighting us in court for a provision that is so difficult to enforce? You've never really articulated the underlying purpose of the booking restriction. My hunch is that it's to appease a few residents with extreme anti-rental feelings. Please think about the financial consequences to the taxpayers of this township of entering into a legal battle over booking restrictions that are so difficult to enforce. If you choose to allow us to operate, then let us operate and let us book our properties as we see fit. If there are problems or complaints, then address those problems when they arise. You'll have the staff and money to do so when we become licensed. If we go to court, the vast majority of us will not become licensed until the case is settled. I would suggest a simple minimum stay requirement that is visible right on the front page of our website, and our calendars will automatically accommodate that and automatically block days that don't meet our minimum stay requirements. My minimum stay is 5 days. The goal of the septic rule is obviously to protect the lakes from pollution, but yet again, you're throwing good money after bad to defend a provision that fails to meet your objective. The septic rule will immediately put about one-third or more of our hosts out of business. We did a short survey, and so far, based on the responses that I've got, about a third of our hosts don't know or don't have a permit. It will affect primarily older cottages in the lakes area. Hosts who can't rent as a short-term rental will likely resort to renting their property year-round, by the month, or selling to permanent residents. There are no requirements to have a septic permit of these alternatives.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other members of the public who would like to address the board?
Good evening. My name is Kathy Schlees. I live at 1079 Resort Drive, which is on Spider Lake. I've lived on Spider Lake since I bought Harold's Resort in 1990. My neighbor is one of the worst offenders of a short-term rental property owner possible, yet I am here in defense of short-term property owners. These are my opinions. I've been in the short-term rental business for 28 years. I do support a short-term rental registry as there becomes more short-term rentals on the market. However, I think that what started out as good intentions here has ended up a train wreck. This ordinance will change the landscape of the Forest Lakes area irrevocably. The family cabins will be torn down and new, big, year-round houses will be built in their place, and there's no going back once this happens. I think this is a zoning issue and not a police or noise ordinance issue. Land gets zoned every day for certain purposes, such as commercial or residential, and there are places in this township that are better suited to short-term rental than others. Spider Lake and the Forest Lake area have been hosting visitors and tourists since the 1930s and 40s. When we bought Harold's Resort in 1990, there were a handful of personal cabins being offered for rent and several cabin court resorts like Harold's on the lake. There's also a small percentage of homes being used as principal residences, and over the last 28 years, this small percentage of principal residences has grown as old cottages have been torn down to make way for larger year-round homes. The fact does not change the original intention and use of the Forest Lakes area. People choose to make this their home for the same reasons people choose to vacation here, and I think everyone here would like to preserve that. There are areas of the township that are not as conducive to short-term rentals as the lakes area. Neighborhoods that were built for primary use as principal residences like Holiday Hills should be treated differently than those in the areas that have always welcomed and accommodated the visitors to our area. The Forest Lakes area was always a tourist and visitor destination, sometimes for a weekend, sometimes for a week in the summer, and if you were lucky enough to spend the whole summer up north on the lake. So it boggles my mind when I see a restriction on how many days a short-term rental is allowed to rent. Most everyone rents weekly in the summer. If there happens to be a week open or you have a cancellation, then maybe someone might try to fill their week up with two different guests, somebody for 3 days, somebody for 4 days. What's the big difference? Either way, there is someone there all 7 days. In the off-season, most renters are here for a weekend. Once in a while, you get somebody for a few days during the week. It's the slow season, and we take what we can get. Sometimes you might have three different rentals back-to-back for 3 or 4 nights each, then nothing for a week or two. I don't know anyone running their place like a hotel with new guests every day out on the lakes. In real life, this restriction would be a nightmare to facilitate and police with the current online travel agency calendars like Gail just showed you. I think everyone agrees we all want all of the septic system in the township to function properly, and I don't think that short-term owners should be singled out on this.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll finish up. Is there any other public comment? Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. I hope you're all doing well, too. My name is Dave Burke. I reside at 655 Arbutus Trail. I have a short-term rental at 702 Arbutus Trail, two doors away from us. First of all, I was reading through the what's in the packet today for the agenda, and it looks like you've made some modifications to the frequency of rentals. But I don't quite understand them, so I would ask if, in the process of discussion, if the board could explain exactly what they mean. It may solve a lot of the problems, but not all of them. And to that purpose, I'd like to address a group of people that no one seems to have considered or at least brought up, and that's the people that are short-term rentals, that are the renters. They come here for a variety of reasons. I distributed a packet of four different letters, my wife told me to do so, to you that was in your packets here, but I just wanted to read one that explains why people would be renting for less than 7 days, probably within the within the be an exception to the rules that you've just promulgated here. Dear East Bay Township Board, it has come to my attention that you have decided that there will no longer be rentals for less than one per 7 days. As a renter, my husband and I are typically able to only get away for a few days at a time. We have a special needs son. We had the logistics of us finding someone to stay with him is very difficult. The most we can get away for is only a few days at a time. The flexibility of rental units like the one we have rented in, which was our place, is huge. I would ask that you reconsider your decision and allow for the flexibility so that many of us need. Now, these individuals, not just the aesthetics and good feeling it gives to give them an attempt to get away from their demands, but also these are potential residents of our area. They contribute to our economy. A number of them have said, well, we'll go to Olson's or PGO's or Subway or whatever, and they stimulate our economy. So I would ask you consider that the actual people that are renting as something, a good thing to do for them, but also as a benefit to our economy. And if you could, explain this a little bit more, your revision of it then, too. I'm not sure I understand it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have a public comment? Go ahead. And I would just say if there's anyone else after this gentleman, just come right up and stand behind him and wait your turn. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm Ken Warner. I live at 825 Munson. My wife and I have been there for several years during our retirement. My wife grew up there. They were believed, she thinks that they were the first year-round residents at the base of Munson 65 years ago. Subsequently, virtually all the homes became owner-occupied, typically year-round, but some of them seasonally, but all owner-occupied. When we first got married over 40 years ago, we moved into a neighborhood that had all homes in it and naively thought that meant it was a residential neighborhood. We found out later that the zoning permitted other possibilities, and we had an institution built on the street literally right across from us. We decided we wouldn't make that mistake again. So when we thought about moving here permanently, we looked into it, and lo and behold, we were zoned, not zoned, I realize it wasn't zoning, but it was residential. It is zoning. It was residential. We assumed that meant it was just for people who were living in their homes. Subsequently, we learned that there are no definitions, or there weren't any definitions at the time. That neighborhood, and this is on the base of East Bay, as I say, was 100% owner-occupied. Currently, two of the four houses to our west are seasonal rentals, so they're rented out during the summer. And I ask you to think about what that implies for those of us who moved in with the assumption that we would be living in a residential neighborhood, and that that seems to be changing. Not a lot, but at least it's changing near us. I want to very much agree with the woman over here that you may be able to find a partial solution to this, because I don't think you're making anybody happy. I think you know that on both sides of this. But it may well be that there are specific areas, such as ours, that has historically been completely residential. That should be zoned residential. Right now, it's being set up to be mixed use. So, in effect, you have changed the definition from residential to mixed use. That's what it is at the present time. So I think I very much concur with her. I'm actually an economist by training. I believe in markets. I like the idea of bringing more people into the area for seasonal vacationing and so on. But I do think that there are areas where this is just plainly and simply inappropriate, others where it may be very appropriate. And I know that requires quite a lot of work to differentiate them, but I would ask you to at least give some consideration to that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any other public comment?
Hi. Susan LaRose, 5595 Tiger Road, which is on Runny Lake. And I'll just read the letter and then add a few comments that I'd sent to everyone last night. I'm asking the board members to please help preserve the character of residential zoning districts in East Bay Township. There's been so much focus on the commercial rental owners that a main point has been forgotten. What about the 365-day residents that live in these neighborhoods? There is nothing in this ordinance to help preserve the character of residential neighborhoods. Really think what your decision will do for residential districts and the loss of value to sell your home that is surrounded by short-term rentals. Please, please help preserve our 365-day residents that currently live in residential neighborhoods that have short-term rentals. Preserve the neighborhood community where you know your neighbor and their families. Please limit to one transition a week to preserve the character of our residential neighborhoods in East Bay Township. So I'm just asking, there is no happy medium with short-term rentals popping up everywhere. There has never been any rental on our road ever, and now there are two on either side of my house. And I'm asking, it's still zoned residential. I'm begging you, please, there's a lake there too, to really consider what you're thinking. It's not just commercial property. There's families that live here 365 days a year that contribute to East Bay Township. And I'm just asking, help preserve that, because it's only going to just grow. And if you don't stop something now or limit it, there could be, like this other man was talking, pretty soon there will not be any year-round people living there. Thank you.
Great, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm a repeater, too. Jeff Byers. I live on Traeger over by Sioux, Rennie Lake. I'd like to thank the board. I agree with registering short-term rentals, and I agree with all the safety regulations, the fire codes, the smoke detectors, CO2 detectors, the egress windows. I think that's all great. My only question is, like Mr. Jury pointed out, I don't know the justification for the seven-day restriction. I, for the life of me, can't figure out a safety or health issue. And you have put this ordinance under police power to avoid the zoning. My understanding of police power, then there should be a safety or health violation, and I don't see how that fits in. Sue is one of my neighbors. I'm supposedly owner of one of the rentals on the other side of her. We're three or four houses away. I'd kind of say we don't have any power boats or jet skis. I don't allow those. I don't think many short-term rentals do. That makes us quieter. We're less intrusive. If I move in there, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to have a power boat, probably a jet ski or two. It's going to make it worse. Also, short-term rentals are basically vacant for 6 months out of the year. That's quieter than year-round 365 days. So some of those arguments are just kind of, I don't know. There seems to be a serious prejudice against the renters. I don't know why. Our renters have been great. And also to address the reasoning for the short term, our first two runners this year so far, we had a marathoner for the big marathon. So he only needed it really one night. And then we just had a group of fly fishermen that were just here for a short weekend. So they don't have a need for more than two or three nights. And then I don't know the exact percentage, but it's usually over half our people are here for weddings and or family reunions. Those are one-day events. They're not going to come and stay for 5-6 days for a one-day event. Just doesn't make sense. But to restate, and I've said it at least three times here, my biggest objection is the seven-day restriction. That's a business restriction. Has no basis that I can see in health or safety. That's just a harassment of a business operator for no apparent reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Next public comment. Hi, how are you?
Hello. My name is Jackie Stegman. I own a home on Spider Lake. I have owned this property for 15 years. We have enjoyed our home when my son was young. but I wanted you to also know it has been used as a means to serve our community. It has housed three pastors in transition, multiple missionaries that have needed respite from their mission field. I have homed a woman that was living in her aunt's garage after losing her job during the recession. I have housed a couple that could not afford housing in Grand Traverse County. I have allowed a neighbor to use my home after her mother's death when she was in need of housing for her extended family. And I have allowed a woman, I have allowed multiple women to stay there when needing to seek spiritual guidance and wisdom during difficult times in their lives. When we did decide to use the opportunity of the short-term rental for solely the summer season, our primary home life was in transition. We were meeting the needs of two children at risk for homelessness, and they have lived with us for the last 5 years. Along with sending our son to an out-of-state college, the income generated for our college, or for our cottage, has contributed to giving us additional income to help the extended, to help extend further the two children who are now on their way to college and the first on both sides of their family to do so. The income has helped pay for my son's college tuition and also the needs, and now the college needs, the tuition needs of these two children. We've been able to do maintenance on our cottage that has significantly improved our own cottage values along with our neighbors. We hired an East Bay Township resident that was struggling financially and allowed him to get on his feet to continue to desire to launch his own business. He was our primary contractor on our cottage. I've had neither neighbor complain on either side of us to the township or myself about any of my renters. I am very strict as to whom I rent to, along with very cognizant of the renter's needs and my neighbors. I recently asked my neighbors again if they have had any issues, and again the answer was to quote, no, everyone has been very friendly. Their only complaint to me was that there is a resident woodpecker that is pecking out on the downspout every morning at 6:15 like clockwork. My intention of speaking is to allow you to know that my husband and I live quiet and private lives, but me publicly speaking about my cottage gives you maybe a perspective that hasn't been considered.
I'll just ask you to wrap up.
Okay. Thank you. Our cottage has met the needs of East Bay Township and Grand Traverse County's community. It hasn't been profit motivated. It has been service motivated. As written, the restrictions, particularly the weekly, would detrimentally affect who we serve in the community via our cottage. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Please. Hello, how are you?
Hi, good. I'm Pat Warner. I live at 825 Munson Avenue. I've come to these meetings and I think raised an issue early on that there are multiple neighborhoods and communities within East Bay Township, which is very diverse, commercial, residential, multi-use. And I think as all of the discussion has gone on, it's kind of a no-win situation when there's one option for short-term rental, and I think people have spoken to that. So I would urge, even though it's going to be a nightmare to try to implement, that there be a look at traditional residential zone areas and leave them as such and still respect the multi-use short-term rental that's gone on for years. To fit everybody into one ordinance, as was said previously, nobody's going to be happy. I also believe that we reached the 7-day as a compromise for the concerns of people who are in residential that didn't want short-term to be coded short-term rental. I also would just note that these discussions have gone on for years, I believe, before this ordinance finally came to fruition, and it's incumbent on us as residents to know what's being discussed. I feel badly, and I hope we're not setting a precedent, that if people don't like what an ordinance is, that we create a lawsuit for everything to come to a halt. I think that would get very expensive, and hopefully we can give input in a meaningful way before ordinances get passed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Okay, seeing no other people for public comment, we'll bring that back to the board. Brian, what I would like to start off with is we have a memo here in the packet from you that discusses the inclusion of two options of ordinances. Could you kind of do the rundown on those? Terrific.
After I was here last meeting, there was lots of discussion from the board as to issues you wanted me to address or try to clean up the language, and that's what I tried to do. I gave you two options, but I'm going to go over the content of my memo first, and then I'm going to deal with paragraph 5 of my memo at the end. There was a concern about the definition of the word premises and property, and so I cleaned that up to make sure that when you're referring to the land on which the short-term rental is actually located, I use the term premises. If you're talking about land in general or land in the neighborhood outside of the specific land where the short-term rental is located, I use the word property because I thought that the comment was correct, that they were kind of synonymous, if you will, in the terms of the definition, so I revised that definition. Because I deal with language under Section 6B, I eliminated the definition of rental frequency. I didn't think that was needed given the new language of 6B that I will be talking about later. Okay. Again, in 3, I eliminated the term rental frequency in that particular section. 4, in Section 5D, I inserted a time requirement to determine when an application is administratively complete. Again, that was a comment from the board at the last meeting. We'll talk about paragraph 5 in a few minutes. 6, I tried to attempted to clarify the language of 6J, added and or in section 6K1, and added deputies of the sheriff in section 10B. When you look at the differences between option 1 and option 2, it all boils down to section 6B. Okay, so if everybody can find section 6B of the ordinance, I'm going to start with option 1. Option 1 was intended to keep in place the intention of the board when they enacted the original ordinance. And basically what this says, and again I wanted to make it clear in the first sentence, that a short-term rental can be from any period, from one night to 30 nights. When we defined a short-term rental, we're talking about 30 nights or less. Okay? And so nothing in this ordinance prohibits a property owner from renting a dwelling, a short-term dwelling, for the full 30 days. They could go a 30-day rental. They could go two 14-day rentals. Okay? Nothing that stops. There's nothing in this ordinance that stops that. They could go a rental of 7, 7, 7, and 7 if they wanted to. It's only when you get into a short-term rental that's less than 7 days do the special rules apply. Okay, and so I wanted to make sure that everybody understands that there's nothing in this ordinance that stops a property owner from renting his or her property for the full 30 days, even if you wanted to go 7 days back to back to back to back. Nothing that prohibits it under this ordinance. And I want to make sure that that's clear for not only the board members, but also for the members of the public. So, last time there was discussion when you're talking about something that's less than 7 days, there was major discussions. Well, is it Tuesday to Wednesday? Wednesday to Tuesday? What was the 7 day period going to be defined as? With the help of Rick and Leslie and Beth, I got around that. I didn't want to deal with it because each person's week could be different. Okay, and so we made it clear that for purposes of the subsection, the first night of a subsequent short-term rental shall be no less than 7 nights from the first night of the previous. So we have an internal calculation of what that seven-night period is, okay? Owner one may be Friday to Thursday. The next owner may be Sunday to Saturday. So each individual property owner can determine what is his or her seven-day period, if you will, okay? But we made it clear in the language that you couldn't put them any closer, okay, that in fact seven-night period. That's generally what option one is, okay? Again, trying to keep the original intent of what you were looking at. If you look at option two, which is the second proposed ordinance, and again, turning to section 6B, here we're talking about, again, making it clear that it could be anywhere from one night to 30 nights. For any short-term rental less than seven consecutive nights, there shall be at least three consecutive nights of no short-term rentals. That's a different, slightly different concept, okay? And so under that language, you could have a short-term rental of two nights. You have 3 nights off. You could have another short-term rental of 2 nights within the same 7-day period, okay? So what we attempted to allow more flexibility for the property owners, but also balancing the competing interests, making sure that the neighborhood has a fixed time off of no short-term rentals, okay? So that's the concept, basically, of option two, okay? So option one basically just continues the intent of only one rental period within 7 days. Doesn't mandate a specific number of nights off, okay? But if you have something that's less than 7 days, you can't start the next subsequent rental period until after that 7 days has expired, okay? So if you have a 5-day rental, you're going to automatically have 2 days off before you can then start the next period. If you have a 2-day rental, then under the option one, you're going to have a 5-day layoff. Mm-hmm. So option two, if you will, gives the property owner, the short-term rental owner, more options, if you will, for the shorter rental periods. Two on, three off, two on would be permissible under option one, as an example.
Option two.
Under option two. But under option one, you have 2-day rental, then you cannot start the next rental until the expiration of 7 days from the beginning of the first one. So that's going to mandate more time off. I just want to make sure you see that we tried to be more flexible in the application of the language. But again, under both options, property owners have the right to rent their property for the full 30 days. There is nothing in this ordinance that is prohibiting a property owner from renting their land or their dwelling for short-term rentals. And I want to make that very clear. Mm-hmm. That we're not trying to take away people's property rights, but we're trying to balance the interests of the property owner and the neighborhood.
Brian, just again to be specifically clear, the first option that you have in here, the ordinance, the only difference between that and the ordinance that was passed of a year ago, number one, we have looked at the technical language and made it more legally defensible, more legally sound on solid footing.
Correct.
And two, any policy that has been changed was only changed due to a change of circumstances that we faced regarding implementation.
And we tried to clarify language when we could.
Right. Other than that, the intent stays the same with the first option. And then again, as Brian mentions with the second, the only difference is that item in section 6B in trying to look at, again, balancing the competing interest. One of the things that I just have of my notes here is, you know, the balancing of property owners and short-term rentals, full-time residents, visitors, all of those things. They are competing interests. And yes, it does seem sometimes like, you know, it can, I think someone mentioned it, you don't make anybody happy. That is part of it. You don't make everyone ends up a little bit. We saw this when we went through, you know, mediation. You try to come to something that you can all agree upon. But I just wanted to give Brian the opportunity to go through that. I thank you, Brian, for your work on this, the clarification of it, and I'll bring this back to the board for discussion. If there are questions for Brian, I guess we can start there. Mindy?
Brian, I really like the 7-day defined. I think it's very... very crystal clear now on what it is.
Are you talking about the option one or two?
Both of them. Okay. I think it's a whole lot more clear to anybody reading it what it's saying. I will say with option two, not that this is my preferred, I'm just saying that if we do option two, we need to add the language of what a 7-day rental is from option one to option two.
Actually, I don't know that.
Why would
I'm not sure
that?
We would have to, because it doesn't. It says the days that you add on have to be subsequent to that rental. So for any short-term rental less than 7 consecutive nights, there shall be at least 3 consecutive nights of no short-term rentals before any subsequent short-term rental begins. So it doesn't really matter what day it starts. If it's less than 7 days, it has to have those 3 at the end of that rental.
But you're saying that after that, for the next 7 days and then the next 7 days, I can see that. I'm willing to look at that.
So what are you thinking with that, Brian? And I guess I'm not following that.
It's after the first week, the first 7 days, the 2 on, 3 off, mm-hmm. two back on, mm-hmm. then when you start looking at the subsequent 7 days, that would then begin
3 days later.
That's its own next rental, though, yeah. And then that has that's its own next rental with the defined term of 1 to 7 nights or 30, and so that kicks in that again. So I don't think you have to define it. You just have to, if it's less than 7 days, you have to meet that 3 days after it.
But if they then go the 2 on, 3 off, 2 on, and then they go a 7-day rental.
Excuse me, I'm. Yeah, I the audience, yes. Please stop.
I've looked at this so many times.
So a couple things. Yeah. First, I would just want to mention, if you are here for the meeting, we really appreciate that. We're happy to have you watch our meeting in progress, but we are trying to meet and be able to hear each other. Secondly, going back to this, I think the way that we discussed it is, you don't have. It's not so much in option two.
I don't think we need to add that.
Okay. Defining this, it's not the 7 days you're defining. It's what if you have a rental less than 7 days? Right. How do you kind of mitigate that for, again, balancing those property interests of all different people, to make that more similar to?
I get that all. I just.
But 7 days, I mean, they could do 2 on, 3 off in 7 days. And then they could do another 7 days right after that.
Yeah, and it says any short-term rental less than 7 days.
Less than 7 days is the only
but
time.
But if they rent for 6 days, they have to wait 3 days before they can start again, from what I'm understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's kind of give and take, because in some instances, and I'm not just saying that this is the... If you were to categorize people and say the full-time homeowner doesn't want anything less than 7 days and the property rental owner doesn't want anything more than 7 days, and I'm just broad-stroking this, under this option two, sometimes there will be instances where the homeowner is not going to like the results of 6B, because you can be shorter than 7 days. You could have a 2-night followed by a 3-day. And so that's a 5-day concurrence before the next party comes in. So they lose out. In other instances, you'd have the opposite party lose out, where if you had a 7-day, it would have to be less than 7 days, a 6-day, a 5-day, that'd be followed by a 3-day.
As I look at this, I still think we need to add that language, to be honest with you.
It's crystal clear if you do it that way.
I think you,
what would you use for, I'm sorry, I'm confused too, I guess.
If you don't agree with me, that's fine. I'm just one.
No, I'm just trying to understand.
You don't have to define the 7 days. It goes by a singular rental itself. How many days is it? If it's over 7 days, then there's no issue. You rent it for 7 days, you could turn around and have the next rental in there the very next day. If it's less than 7 days, that's when you have to add the 3-night at the end of it. So you don't need to determine it's at the start of this. It just follows that rental.
You could go 2 on, 3 off, and then you could go 14. Okay? You could go 2 on, 3 off, 7. Okay? So the actual start of your longer rental period would be closer than under the first option, if you will. Okay? That's one of the reasons I don't think you need to add that language, because you've already built into the system the 3 nights off for the neighborhood.
Okay. Other comments and discussion? Go ahead, Andrea.
Did you, I remember last board meeting there was mention of getting terminology or a comparative analysis from other similar neighborhoods. Dynamics, was that done?
So I did contact Host Compliance with respect to language for this part of the ordinance. Under what we had before, they had just mentioned starting that language, and I think we have some of it similar in there. Basically, for the purpose of the subsection, the first night will start from the first night of the first rental to the first night of the subsequent rental. That's basically what they had mentioned, was defining in that first one when the rental term is.
Okay, so the
clarification.
The aspect of doing a comparative of other neighborhoods, though, was not done.
So, yes, we have had some research on that as far as the frequency. We found typically, I think, Leslie, do you recall there were less that had a frequency defined in it, although some did.
Okay, that's ambiguous. I'll just put that out there. For one, that statement's ambiguous. For two, I don't have anything in front of me to see that. Secondarily, I'd like to kind of point out that the spirit of the spirit of individuals that don't want them at all in the area, allowing them to have a full 30 nights is maybe, you know, something. I just kind of find that element a little bit humorous that now we can, you know.
I'm not following you on that one.
Well, they don't want them at all, but now they're going to have them for up to 2 weeks at a time. Anyway, it just kind of seems like this is something we're over-kicking around.
Well, they only could have them for 2 weeks at a
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I know. I realize that. But it's just,
a two-month rental is not a short term.
No, I realize that.
You could theoretically turn it over every 2 months.
So the other idea, you know, the aspect of it being a week at a time, so we're doing like 2 days, 3 days off, so we're still having two rentals in a week, potentially?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Under option two.
Brian, could you clarify? We've always, there has always been the ability for somebody to rent anywhere from one to...
Yeah, I get it. I understand what you're saying.
Days,
I just,
right?
It just... I don't agree with the 7-day. I do want it to be shorter.
Sure.
I really would have preferred to see some comparative analysis for this, because
if I can just add, the minutes that we passed from last month stated on page 6 at the top of the page, after further discussion, it was determined that Friend will ask host compliance for data regarding renter frequency and definitions of a renter week. So I guess if I'm hearing you, you're looking for the component of
I'm looking what, for that.
Right.
So if I recall, when I contacted host compliance, two things I asked them for, which was what data we could pull and terminology to make this more clear. Again, the terminology to make this more clear was literally they said, put in there when you're starting your count and when you're ending that. Obviously, it doesn't affect the option two, but option one would need that definition, and that was put in. And that's the second sentence where it says, for the purpose of this subsection. That's what they're getting at. With respect to the data, we still need to mine that and are accumulating that short-term rental data with host compliance. We do have data from about 28 different sites that show their minimum and maximum for their short-term rentals are anywhere from 1 to 30 days, which is similar to ours. And we do have about probably less than 5% that have a minimum stay greater than one night. So you have 3 nights, 7 nights, another one is 7 night. It looks like we have about 3 here, I believe, that are weekly rentals.
So then explain to me, because I don't quite have clarity on how host compliance is going to help us monitor these rentals and do the police powering of based on the calendars that are available. Because do you understand what I'm saying? Looking at the information that's out there, it's going to be 100% complaint-based, which means Leslie is going to be really busy if a lot of complaints, right?
Well, I think if we have issues, you can request data of the property owner. Can you not, Brian?
You have to understand that land use regulations, zoning ordinances in particular, are all complaint-based.
Yeah, oh yeah, I get that.
That's why you always invite your neighbor to your neighborhood parties, okay? So the fact that you're going to get complaints or find violations is not going to be through some computer program.
It's exactly my point.
It's going to be through the neighborhood. The neighbor's going to be calling up Leslie and saying, hey, these people are, my neighbor is going to be, is bringing in different groups constantly through it less than 7 days. It's the same kind of a complaint based violation that you have with zoning all the time. So this should be no different. It's
well,
going to
with
be
noise ordinance with
and
anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to call host compliance, the 1-800
right.
number, first.
Yep. Well, actually, no, because there's the notification of the property owner's contact information.
They actually
so
could
really,
call the
if
manager.
There is an issue, they should be contacting the property or owner or manager. And then, obviously, if they don't have any relief through doing that, they would contact host compliance, which has a phone tree that they go through in cataloging and getting the information to the appropriate people and cataloging a complaint.
Okay. So my specific opinion is that host compliance is leaning more towards superfluous.
What's that mean? I'm sorry.
That means that we're still doing all of the work.
Oh, no, there's quite a bit
in,
that host compliance offers. You've been on probably the dashboard more than I have, but first of all, it manages all the application materials, the online application. Once we get that, the biggest thing that they do is they monitor the rental sites to determine what rentals are out there. And then they separate those into ones that are compliant and have a license, and then those that are not compliant. And so that will be huge for Leslie, because then what you do is you send letters out to those that are not compliant and say, we're not compliant under this ordinance. You know, either please provide information that that's not the case, or here are the steps that to bring you into compliance with the ordinance. Yeah, there's a lot of information there. I don't know how we would physically do it if they didn't have the computer algorithm to search the short-term rentals. That would be quite a lot of.
And they're providing this to you automatically.
Yeah, I think it's on a weekly basis that they update it. Yep.
Okay, I still think it's inequitable for what we pay them for.
My opinion.
That's fine. And I understand that. It's about $15,000 a year to do that. I think it would be quite expensive to have staff time to sit and comb through those records, and I'm not even sure we would be able to do that.
Okay.
The other thing was there wasn't a whole lot of options out there right now, you know, for this service. And so, you know, when we sent out our RFP, we only got two responses, and one of them whose recommendation company or city had just fired them. So, you know.
And it wasn't just taking host compliance at a, you know, default. When we checked host compliance, references, they were very good. They had excellent things to say about host compliance, the usability of their software, and one of the competing proposal that came to us, one of their clients actually told us they were quitting and going to host compliance, and that they had a lot of good information from host compliance and making that decision and switch. So
okay.
We can always that's almost a separate issue, and that we can always validate and show the services that we're getting, and that's an annual contract too.
Are we? I'm monopolizing the questions. I apologize.
Anybody? You're fine. Go ahead.
Are we looking at other sections in this right now then as well? Or
in my memo, I outlined the changes that I made.
Yeah. Okay. I still have. Under wastewater disposal, I've been communicating with people at the county. How are we going to manage the wastewater disposal section? Is that under 6J?
Mm-hmm.
So the first part, section 1. The wastewater disposal system, including any pre-1972 septic dry well and holding tank system, was actually permitted by the Grand Traverse County Health Department.
Page number that you've got on there.
That is
157. It's going to be page 6 on both options.
157.
So my understanding is that Grand Traverse County doesn't maintain any 1970s pre-build permit information.
I don't know if it's pre-1970. The 1970 marker has to do with what they were expecting in a system, is my recollection. Do you recall, Brian or Leslie? What's that?
I don't recall.
The 1972, I think it was the technical specifications that they required in the wastewater system.
Okay.
And so the reason we drew that out in the ordinance was we did not want a short-term rental property owner to have a system that's older, that functions, but yet doesn't meet the current standards by the health department. We didn't want them to not be included or in violation of this ordinance. So basically, the health department at the beginning would have liked to have said, I believe, would have liked to have said everybody should be in compliance with current code. We're not going to do that. We're not making people replace their pre-1972 systems that are perfectly functioning.
That's all it says. It's basically, if you got a permit, okay, and even though your older system,
okay, does not comply with current requirements, they will still allow that resident, that dwelling, to be used as a short-term rental. Because the health department is not going to make a dwelling that's older, that doesn't, it's almost like being grandfathered, if you will.
Right. Are we having a lot of rogue house building without permits for septic systems?
No.
But that's like secondarily included in here. I just don't, what are we going to do for the people that have an older house than that? I'm still not clear on how you're defining pre-1970, and the health department does not have, due to loss of records.
So
are we
telling
them?
No. There is a period of time that the health department has shared with us that they have some missing records. I can't tell you how extensive that is. I'm not, I don't have access to their records. But there is a period of time where they have mentioned, due to, I believe it's some staffing changes, but I'm not entirely positive.
I've talked to them about some
missing records. Clearly, where this requires, a permit and so forth, that it was permitted through the health department, if they can't produce that, we're not denying the right to a short-term rental through that.
Yes. That's what
if they can't find the records through the health department,
yes, that's what it says.
The ordinance is written, if they cannot produce a permit, then they're not properly functioning, right?
Yes, right.
That's the language.
So
that's not the intent. You need to tell me that, but that's the language.
What does the last half of that then mean? It says proof that the system is properly functioning may include, but shall not be limited to, written documentation from a commercial septic hauler that the holding tank is being pumped on a regular basis, given the size of the holding tank, at least once every 3 years, or a dry well has been pumped or
yeah, but it's
is
not
pumping.
How it is stated is it's all inclusive. It's 1, 2, and 3 inclusion. It's not an and or if but kind of statements.
I took that to mean if the health department doesn't have their permit on file, they can have a pumping company come and do that.
That's not what the language says. What that language is basically saying is, in order to be properly functioning, number one, you have to have a permit. Demonstrate a permit.
That's what I understand. Number one, you have to have a permit.
Number two, that the system is operating as designed, even though it doesn't comply with current regulations. The last sentence is basically proof that of a continuing properly functioning, if you will, the continuation of being properly functioning. If that's not the intent, we can change the language, but that's what the language specifies.
So my point in that is we're requiring that and we're excluding these cabins, but we want to be able to include them, then number one is, I'm going to use it again, superfluous. We don't need it in there if we're making them verify adequate or proper use. Because I know, because I've talked with people at the county, that they don't have records.
And I was just going to say that you're exactly right. When you go back into the 70s,
yeah.
They may have a permit, they may not, even though a permit was issued. I redid my system last summer. They didn't even have it in my name, and I'm the guy that did it. They had it in somebody else's name.
To address this issue, again, this is all the intent of the board. I'll prepare language that actually complies with your intent. What I'm hearing now is they have two ways of showing compliance with wastewater disposal. First option is basically 1 and 2, permit plus properly designed. It's operating as designed. In the alternative, you could say that it's properly functioning may include the written documentation. Put that as in the alternative to 1 and 2 above.
I think what we were looking for after we came away from the meeting, you and Rick and I sat in on that meeting, ahead with the health department.
Yeah.
We didn't feel we could comply with everything the health department wanted. They actually wanted us, their request was that we have an inspection of the system to make sure that the wastewater system is appropriately sized for the short-term rental building. So they wanted to make sure that, you know, they haven't added on, and that system was originally for a two-bedroom cabin, and it's been added on, and it's now a three- or four-bedroom house, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not our job. That's
what we said to them. That's exactly what we said to the health department, which is we're not here to enforce your duties or take on your job. What we're here to do is make sure that if there is a short-term rental that's being used, that it has a properly functioning wastewater disposal system. So, again, the reason we put in the pre-1972, we define properly functioning, which includes pre-1972. We did that so that we wouldn't not permit ones just because they didn't come into compliance with the health department. Again, doing the health what the health department would like to see as, which I really feel like, I'm not saying it's a bad goal, but it's not the township's goal. It's the health, that one should be under the health department. So I think what we're looking for is that it is, as we said, functioning. Right here we talked about having the holding tank or septic system examined or pumped or examined on that three-year time requirement, once every 3 years.
Why can't it simply be that?
It can be.
I think it can be.
It can be.
I think if you add, instead of the both down here, and just say, is using the subsection properly functioning means any of the following, and then you include all of them as options.
I mean, I think we could just include that proof of the system is properly functioning. There's written documentation from a commercial septic hauler that the holding tank is being pumped on a regular basis, given the size of the holding tank, and that for once every 3 years a septic tank and or dry well has been pumped, or the pumping is not required at the time of examination.
So basically eliminate the one and two.
Yep.
From the word as to the word department.
Am I hearing the consensus correct?
Do we need to eliminate the permit or the...
Yeah, the permit and is operating in...
Yeah, I would think so.
Is that the consensus of the board? I mean, I'm trying to...
As long as they go down to that every 3 years.
Right. So basically you could say, as used in this subsection, properly functioning means... Or properly functioning may include but shall not be limited to written documentation. See where that says it?
So they have to get it pumped every 3 years whether they want to or not.
No, they don't have to. They have to have it
looked at
every 3 years.
So you have to call somebody and they have to look in the manhole and say yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
So do they... I don't know.
That's a recommended for the industry.
And through the discussions that you guys had through the Planning Commission and through the Township Board previous to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so where are you at on this?
To that, I just
Jay.
The septic permit out.
This is the language you proposed, but I just heard. Okay? Let me read what the language is, starting with as used, okay? As used in this subsection, properly functioning may include but shall not be limited to written documentation from a commercial septic hauler that the holding tank is being pumped on a regular basis given the size of the holding tank, and at least once every 3 years a septic tank under a dry well has been pumped something along those lines. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or is not required at time of
yep.
inspection.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you're just taking out the middle portion of that paragraph.
Right. So from after properly functioning, starting with the word means, that would be
stricken
all the way through.
The word functioning.
Right.
Nine.
The fourth, fifth line from the bottom.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's going to start off as used in this section, properly functioning may include, but shall not be limited to.
Right.
And the balance of that. Is that what I'm hearing is the consensus of the board?
Yep. Let me read that in full for the board, for the public, and for you. Wastewater disposal. For those short-term rentals not connected to a public sewer system, the wastewater disposal system shall be properly functioning, be maintained in a properly functioning condition, and examined a minimum of once every 3 years. As used in this subsection, properly functioning may include, but shall not be limited to, written documentation from a commercial septic hauler that a holding tank is being pumped on a regular basis, given the size of the holding tank, and that at least once every 3 years the septic tank and or dry well has been pumped, or the pumping is not required at the time of examination.
That's what I have.
Question. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a holding tank being pumped every 3 years.
The septic tank is 3 years. The holding tank, it shows that the holding tank is being pumped on a regular basis given the size of the holding tank.
Okay, and that has to come from the hauler.
Right.
The commercial septic.
You know, you've got all that information at DPW. Every time they're pumped, you've got a record of it. You know, I can't see paying a hauler to...
They don't have to have that from a hauler. They just have to produce their receipts. Every time they have a...
Well, how many haulers are going to get out there, open the trap, and say, oh, you don't need it. I'm not charging you.
I'd have a hard time believing they're going to find one that didn't need pumping if they drive out there.
They could probably give a monthly report. You used to get those for years.
So what this requires with the holding tank is for them to produce the... Obviously, if you have a holding tank, it should be being pumped, right? Mm-hmm. So they would have a receipt from that. You would have to.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They use it for taxes, I'm sure.
Or could the ownership be on DPW producing a monthly report, and then it isn't in...
I mean... I don't know. This would be something that they would have. They have to keep the holding tanks properly functioning. They would have that report. I don't know why we would put the onus on the DPW to do that for the specific.
But if somebody loses their receipt,
it's a total
resource that we could
Definitely.
Use to help them to
Definitely.
Get compliance.
Well, I think that it behooves any property owner to make sure that their systems are running well. Those that are using their property as a short-term rental or a long-term rental would have negative feedback if they
so
didn't
good.
Wait.
Yeah. Really, literally, Sue, thank you.
Why can't you say this? May include but shall not be limited to written documentation from a commercial septic hauler or the DPW.
I don't know that.
I think we can just leave it at that. Leave it at that.
Well, I'll make that change tomorrow afternoon.
We still go back to the board.
That change will be made on option one and option two, since our language is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So, to try to. Are there other questions for Brian, clarifications on any other section?
Just mine.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm still struggling with both options, A and B, on 6B. I believe we need to have some type of a short-term ordinance option for all of our taxpayers. I'm struggling with telling them that they cannot rent for three consecutive days between a booking.
I wouldn't want anyone trying to tell me what to do with my property either. The whole reason why I got on board with the short-term rental was because we didn't have an avenue for them to legally use their property. I can't get behind option one. Option two, I think there's got to be a different option, whether it says rent no more than two times in a seven-day period, not telling them that they have to have a break. You had mentioned, Brian, that you stated the three-day break in option two allows for a reprieve to the neighbors, but that only speaks to if there's only one short-term rental in the neighborhood, because they're not all going to be on that rotation basis the same. So you're not going to see a reprieve only from one particular home that may be a problem home. But isn't that why we made it a police ordinance, so that if there is a problem with a rental property, that they can be fined, they can have an infraction, there is a mechanism. To me, I go back to that. Why make it a police power ordinance if that's not part of the enforcement? It appears as though we're trying to regulate because the neighbors can't talk to each other. We all end up more behind closed doors than we used to. We don't go out and play catch and ball and do cornhole or whatever. I don't think we're supposed to be a replacement.
The purpose of an ordinance like this is a mechanism for the township to balance competing interests, okay? And if everybody could talk amongst themselves and solve all the problems, that would be a great place, okay? That's just not going to happen in today's world, okay? And so who is then, assuming that individual neighbors cannot work out their problems, then who or what entity will step in to make the rules?
I think the mechanism.
It's the township.
But I think the mechanism as a police power ordinance is that if they're having a disagreement and they can't talk to the property owner, there's a mechanism, but then I don't think that we should be the ones to say you can rent this for 3 days, but then you can't rent it again until you've met that threshold. That's where I'm having the issue. I think we need to have an ordinance for them so that they can lawfully use their homes the way they wish to. They're all taxpayers of the township. Some may not get to vote, others may, but they're all taxpayers. They all pay their taxes.
But that's the fundamental policy choice that this board must make.
Right.
You are expressing a view on one end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There are views on the other end of the spectrum as well.
Okay? Of course.
And so that's the deliberative process of this board as a whole.
Yep.
So I guess
I agree.
On that note, trying to balance the competing interests and with paying respect to the process that the township has invested in time and resources substantially over the past 2 to 3 years in the Planning Commission and the Township Board. You know, as you mentioned, balancing those competing interests. It may not make everybody happy at any one specific meeting. Everybody here knows we've had meetings with very mixed public who express their opinions. We have had some meetings that are on one end of the spectrum or the other. Again, the board members here have to balance those and look at all of those issues. I think that we took considerable time in doing that. We also took a recommendation from the Planning Commission. And again, in June of 2018, this township board passed 5-2, basically what is option number one. The only things that have been changed are to make it more legally defensible and more in line with something such as the records or lack thereof at the health department, those types of things. So I'll go ahead just to move this off of go and move to approve notification, or rather
motion to introduce
short-term rental licensing ordinance option number 2 of 2019. I'm sorry, that would be option ordinance number 5 of 2019, which is based on option 1 as changed subsection 6, was that J?
J.
For the wastewater as drafted at the meeting, and to introduce that with per the Charter Township Act with postings in the clerk's office and the website.
Your motion is to adopt the short-term rental ordinance being option 2, what's before you, correct?
Nope.
No,
she said one. She started with 2 and then changed it.
Trying to get us off.
So you're basically introducing the short-term rental, the option 1 version, if you will.
Correct.
With the language change that we just went over on section 6J.
That's correct, Brian. Okay. That's correct. Right. Again, that is consistent with what was passed by this township board a year ago in June of 2018. So is there support for that motion?
Support.
Okay, motion has been made and supported. Is there further discussion? Okay, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Friend?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Lyle?
No.
Henschel?
No.
Forte?
No.
Morrow?
No.
And Bartlett?
Yes.
Okay, so that motion fails. Let's try something again. That doesn't work. And let's see if there is support for option 2. So I would move to approve for introduction option 2 of the short-term rental potential ordinance number 5 of 2019 with the verbiage on the wastewater treatment 6J changed as directed to legal counsel. Is there support for that motion?
I would support it.
Okay, motion has been made by Friend, supported by Bartlett. Is there further discussion? And we'll do a roll call vote.
Friend?
Yes.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Corte?
No.
Henschel?
No.
Morrow?
No.
Lyle?
No.
Walters?
No.
Okay, motion passed. Okay. So, right now, what we have is the current ordinance on the books, correct, Brian?
Once it's been enacted.
Okay. I would like to... Okay, so we have the ordinance that is passed in June of 2018, and we'll move forward with enforcement of that.
Actually, I think we have until July.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, July 15th, sure.
Right, so I'd like to... make a motion to change that to 4 nights, period.
Motion to change the short-term rental.
Recurrent, yeah, just I want this completely redone. I want a 4-night back-to-back ability for renters.
So you want option 1 instead of 7, it says 4.
Yeah. I do not want a seven-day period. I want a 4-day period.
So what specific section are you wanting me to change? Let's be specific.
6B.
Okay. Option 1.
Option 1, 6B. Yeah,
and okay. She basically is suggesting that would be a four-day minimum or 4-day time period.
If I understand that, because you're going to probably have to explain how that would change it. Right?
Well, it means you can have...
But he's going to have to craft it and bring it back.
So it would come back in July. We can actually identify that now. But what it would be So short-term, six.
Let me make sure I understand where she's coming from, okay? This is what you're proposing. Let's follow the language, okay?
Yes.
This is section 6B. The short-term rental is for any period from one night to 30 nights, and no more than one short-term rental occurs in any four-night period. For purposes of this subsection, the first night of a subsequent short-term rental shall be no less than four nights from the first night of the previous short-term rental. That
yes,
I'm hearing you say.
Correct. That is what I want.
Okay.
And we would...
I'm one, though.
Well, the provided, however, any contracts were entered into, I think you would want to keep that as well.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. And as well, the changes to 6J. I'm assuming are
yes.
in your motion?
Yes.
Okay. So, the motion has been made by Henschel to approve for introduction option one of the proposed short-term rental ordinance with 6B changed to a four-night consecutive night stay,
mm-hmm.
and for the 6J to be changed as directed to legal counsel.
Yeah. I got those two changes.
Okay. So that is, does that articulate your
yes,
motion?
Yes, you did very well. Thank you very
so,
much.
So the motion by Henschel, is there support for that motion?
Support it.
Okay. Motion by Henschel, support by Morrow. Any further discussion? Okay. Anne, could you do a roll call vote, please?
Henschel.
Yes.
Morrow.
Yes.
Lyle.
No.
Walters.
No.
Forte.
Yes.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Who else did I miss?
Friend. Friend.
Friend.
No. Okay, motion passes. Did I get that right? Did I listen to everyone? Motion passes.
Yeah,
it passes.
No.
Yes.
Correct. So, Brian, we will introduce that ordinance then and bring that back to the July board meeting for potential action.
I will email you a revised ordinance that has those two changes. I won't get to you until tomorrow afternoon. I got to be in Sheboygan in the morning.
Sure, that's fine.
And so then it'll be published as per the posting that we do in the old blurb in the newspaper.
If you can get it to us tomorrow.
So,
Or Wednesday, then I can still get it in the paper before the weekend. Correct.
Okay, everybody.
And having it on the website and on the board in the clerk's office.
So I've given you that form. That's not something I can prepare.
Yeah.
I don't have to prepare that. Okay.
Yep. So just so the public could hear, because we had a little bit of discussion here, Brian is preparing the changes to the ordinance as directed through the motion. That will be posted as an introduction over the next period of the next month until the July board meeting. That will be available at the clerk's office in print. It will be available on our website, as well as a synopsis will be in the newspaper.
When is the July meeting?
I believe it's
eighth.
The 8th.
You want me to attend that?
Yeah, that would be good if you're able to do that. Thank you, Brian. And then this ordinance will be back before the township board at the July regular board meeting for potential action. Very, very similar to what we just did earlier tonight with the Brown Bridge Quiet Area Ordinance and the Fireworks Ordinance. Okay? All right. Does anybody have any further questions or discussion on this? Okay, we will move forward to the second to the last agenda item, which is the election commission and some changes. Sue, if you'd like to go over that.
Certainly. In your packets, you'll see that the election commission met. We have been notified that there is a potential to have possibly two special elections still in 2019. And with the changes to Proposal 3 of 2018, we are seeing a tremendous increase in absentee voter requests. And so the Election Commission discussed how we can best service the residents and have determined that instead of one absentee counting board that would have to count all four precincts on Election Day, that we prefer and to better serve would have four absentee counting boards, one machine for each precinct. We may still have two physical groups of people that would have two purposes. You know, they would take care of two different precincts, but the equipment would be standalone for each precinct. And the addition to that is that the modems that currently transport the information from the tabulator to the county at the end of the night are no longer usable. All of the cell service providers have updated away from that model and no longer service it, so we have to upgrade all of those machines. So what the request is to utilize the fund balance that we've set aside to purchase future election equipment, not take it out of this current working budget, but to pull it from our balance amount. The amount that would be needed to purchase the three new tabulators and for the six existing tabulators and the three new ones, the modems to be compliant and be able to continue to transmit the results. That amount is $18,822. And then also our e-poll book laptops are not Windows 10, and the State of Michigan Bureau of Elections have done away with any support in course communications with any software less than Windows 10. So we have to update the seven laptops that we have with the Windows 10 software. It's much cheaper than updating seven new laptops. That's $1,001. And then as we were going through everything in your late packet, Helen went to print a report, my deputy, and her computer died. It had a fatal hard drive error. So our elections main computer needs to be replaced. So I'm adding to the request $780 from fund balance to pay for that new computer as well. So the total amount that would be coming out of the balance sheet dollars would be $20,603. That would be a utilization going to capital and to cover the upgrade. And as a note down underneath here, now that the audit is over, we did utilize some of the money that we had in the 2018 budget. That needs to be reduced out of that balance sheet. And so the new total balance sheet amount after the utilization is going to be, instead of the $63,000, it will be $38,030.53. So when you get your balance reports after this transaction, that's what it's going to show instead of $63,000. But that's going to allow us to have the equipment we need going into these two possible elections in 2019 and then moving forward in 2020.
Okay, so
did I encapsulate that well enough?
Does anybody have any questions for Sue on that?
I do. Was that the $780 was the specs for the computer that IT Wright suggested for this?
That is for the QVF standalone computer that has all of our database that connects.
So it was the i5 solid-state processor. Why do we need a writable DVD system in that?
Because we cut floppy. We cut
floppy.
I know.
Okay,
I know.
Sorry.
We burn DVDs if candidates request them.
Okay. I just wondered.
Sorry, yeah, it's not a floppy. That really ages me, doesn't it? Thanks, Brian. I think you're right there with me.
Apple IIe, it's all good, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. And we requested IT Wright to come up with the one that was most compatible, and it is the same ones that we just put in throughout the building.
Okay, I just wondered.
That one was 2 months newer than the ones we replaced. Unfortunately, who knew that lifespan really was going to kill it within 2 months?
It really had not been, the computer had not been used. I mean,
it's used daily.
Oh, but I mean, it was within its span of being able to be updated with Windows 10. They put Windows 10 in, and it was just
And that was a month ago.
It decided to be unhappy quickly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It didn't concur with IT rate and staff's suggestion that it could be updated. It took another, as I said, took another.
So the total request that the Election Commission is requesting is $20,603 to be moved from the utilization of election equipment into the working budget to purchase those items.
So if there's no further discussion, I would move to approve the request of the Election Commission for the purchase of the three DS200 tabulators and the 9 G4 DS2 modem and an antenna device with Windows 10 upgrades to the 7 election laptops, and approval of the associated budget amendment 2019-11, as well as that being amended by the $780 for the computer purchase that was not at the request of the Election Commission but determined subsequently.
Support.
Okay. Motion has been made, supported. Is there any further discussion? Okay. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? By no. Okay. The motion passes. Absolutely. Let's see. Grace McDonald Park. You had asked about the improvements there. They are getting ready to pave. Actually, the weather will be affecting them a little bit this week and maybe into next week. They've poured the concrete out there. Brian was out there in the rain and said the drainage looked really good. So we were happy about that. And that is where we're at right now.
Do you have plans to revisit the kiosk issue?
So the kiosk, I don't have this before you tonight. I'm looking at doing a change order for that because, as you know, it was quite expensive through Elmer's. We have looked at the kiosk. We have talked with, I know the location of the AED was at issue, and we have talked with emergency service personnel about that. So we are still looking at doing a kiosk. We have been out there with Brian Souza after we had requested information from Pat Parker and Nick Lemkuhl. They provided that, which they felt that the kiosk would be a good location for that, very centrally located. The location of the kiosk will be between the used Bell Diamonds, between the park, and the playground area and the tennis area and so forth. As well, there will be signs in, like, for example, the tennis area and the pickleball, where the AED is located. There is an AED and where it's located. But the kiosk will be straight down the view shed of the fence line down in the middle, nice. Where, of course, cars are not parked in the middle. And it also serves as, if you'll recall, you go out there and there's a little garage there and there's a gate there, that we need that for access for Bob into that gated area. To the right, there's a little bit of a space there that...
That used to be where the Port-a-John was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's why, and it really doesn't, you know,
he tries to have it
locked off so that nobody can take a vehicle onto the park property. We don't have too many issues with that, but it can be. So that was the perfect spot, very centrally located, and that kiosk would actually act as a bit of a buffer or, you know, for that. So
yeah, that's great.
Exactly. As well, we did ask Elmer's for, if we replace the rest of the fencing in the park, what would that be? Because we're already doing the area right in the parking lot and adjacent. And that's going to be like another $15,000 plus materials. And so we think we're just going to do that ourselves in-house, renting the equipment.
Maybe an Eagle Scout would like to do that.
Renting the equipment in-house and putting our two part-time person and full-time person on doing
have
that.
Them post whole day
so, right, so Bob was taking a look at their rental availability and how long of a block of time they think it would take them to do that.
Will you please convey to Bob, just because of the phase of life I'm in, I'm sure you two have been to a lot of graduation events out there, and it's been very nice.
Good.
So please
great.
Pass that.
Great. There are a lot of there's a lot of activity out there. Of course, you know, Val keeps the reservations and so forth, and just in making sure that, okay, what's going on and what are they doing out there, and trying not to block anything with graduation.
Elmer's has been very good about moving their things off so it's accessible. So
good.
That's also been very nice.
Good. Terrific.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
Terrific. So if I can just take a little latitude here, we haven't had the same success with Jen's Park because of the water levels.
I was out there. It was flooded, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Completely. You could not have predicted that. So we are looking at what we want to do in response to that. The vendor has been very workable with us, and so we'll be kind of taking a look, and that'll be evolving over the next couple weeks.
Okay. So, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I believe, you know, my computer's down, and I do think, though, that we are at the end of the agenda, correct?
Yes.
Does anybody else have anything else that I'm missing that I had? Okay, we'll move on to public comment. This is the last public comment of the evening. If you would like to make public comment to the board, you are welcome to stand up and address the board. And we thank you for being here and making it through our entire meeting. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. I'm John Wirewis. I live at 1140 East River Road. Been here for almost 30 years. And we're gone in the next month or two because of this rental situation. We share a driveway that has become a real pain in the carcass. So I just want to say that. I think Susan LaRose, for her comments, the people that were on Munson Avenue, the same thing. You've lost your community. You have plain lost your community. There's going to be more people like me leaving after 29 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment this evening?
Nancy Gonzalez, 709 Munson Avenue. I just wanted to say that once again I leave the township board meeting frustrated and disappointed. I too am a taxpayer and a homeowner, and while you feel that you can't regulate the short-term rental owners, you are regulating my life by allowing their existence. The fact that they can rent for less than a week at a time, you know, I've said it all before at these meetings, so the short-term rentals that are the least number of days are by far the most obnoxious. The people come up, for the most part, the ones that have been by our house, they don't seem to sleep. Probably because they're there for a limited number of time, you know. But I'm just going to say that I agree with the last man that spoke. You know, you are changing my life by allowing this. And we had a deal last June that it was once every 7 days. And now you've left us with basically nothing. Thank you.
Okay, any other public comment this evening? Yes, sir. How are you?
Good, how are you today?
Good.
My name is Franklin Kiley, and I live on River Road, off River Road, basically. I have a rental there. And first of all, I just want to thank you guys all for, I know this is a very difficult process for everybody, but speaking of difficult processes, like, I mean, I'm coming from the point of, like, the marketing aspect, which is incredibly difficult. The seven-day thing and managing 2 days in, 2 days off, like, these companies that we use to manage this stuff, they just don't work like that. It's going to make it, like, really, really hard to manage those aspects. For the life of me, cannot understand, like, at least in our situation, how this seven-day thing makes any sense at all, or trying to limit that, because the people that we have are so incredibly respectful, and they come up here. There are people like, for example, we have one group that's just a couple. It's a husband and wife. They come up here This is their fifth year. They're looking to become permanent residents. And we're giving them the opportunity to really experience what it's like to live up here in a home-type environment, you know, and give them the opportunity to go and look at different areas that they would like to buy a home at someday. There are plenty of neighborhoods around here that have what's called an HOA, which is like Homeowners Association, which regulates whether that neighborhood can have short-term rentals or not, you know. That's part of the way things are. If you're living in one of those neighborhoods, I'm sorry. You know, if that's something that you're looking for, there are opportunities like that. But you can't, I mean, you guys, I just can't communicate enough the challenge. If you have somebody come in and rent for 3 days, how you block in the system, if you're going to try to be competitive, those sites rank you based on your availability from like a number of points. Like,
I believe we understand what you're saying, that there you feel that there's an incompatibility with your booking age, your internet booking site.
Yeah, they just don't work like the way that you guys are thinking, and I understand the what you're trying to achieve with that, but it makes it like near impossible to be competitive anyway in the marketplace. Okay. You lose your rank, and or you lose it like everything else. It's like it's just you know. So yeah, that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Any other public comment this evening? Sure, we do have one, but go ahead quickly.
Yeah, I'm going to make this really quick. Something that we haven't considered, I manage my properties myself. I don't think we've looked at the other management companies. Mr. Wyrus is my neighbor, and I respect him very much, and I really hate to see him go. I know for a fact that there are some companies here in town that manage rentals, and they are they're fishing for the fish in the barrel, where I very carefully vet out the guests that I have. Like the gentleman said, that he has repeat customers. They come, they're very quiet. I've had some Michigan State Supreme Court justices stay at my house. I've had mayors from several large cities stay at our house. I have had really wonderful people. I don't rent to anybody under 30. So I think to help console some of these people, and I feel terrible that they don't feel like they are part of the community anymore. Maybe that's something that we need to look at, is how we vet out our guests, you know. Or maybe we need to look at local companies specifically that are just really fishing for the barrel to book these units. They take 30%. I know a lot of attorneys who take 30%, 33 and a third as well. So let's maybe that's something we need to look at. Just a thought.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Any other public comment this evening? Okay, seeing nothing further, thank you all for attending. Have a good evening and a safe drive home.